Yeah. That's even worse. That's even worse than driving because you have, it's even worse than driving because you have, if the train's 10 minutes late, you can't do anything. And you get, people get in trouble if they're 10 minutes late for work because the train had a problem. You can't win. That working, that cable?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Making sure it's
thank you.
I know. Dennis, I'll get it back to you.
Did you get your bad guy to try?
My cell phone got its charge. That's all I needed.
I had it for a while.
Oh, okay.
I come prepared for emergencies.
Okay. Oh, that's the micro.
Good to see you.
Yeah, I thought I had. I thought this.
All right, guys. 9 o'clock. Welcome back to the clubhouse. Anybody start any new hobbies for all the days you couldn't come to the clubhouse? Any nice gardening or stuff like that that you guys did?
What planet are you living on?
I designed and built an audio amplifier, 30 watt per channel audio amplifier.
All right, there you go. All
right. I learned how to shovel.
You're not loud enough for
that. Looking at email, waiting until you got the notice that we were.
I like that.
There you go. There you go. Right. Speaking with bated breath. So. All right, we're talking about packet radio this morning. This is something that I was working with, and a couple of my colleagues were working with back years and years ago. I went out and dragged out my copy of 73 magazine. If any of you guys remember 73 magazine, this is the August 1986 issue of it, and was my first nationally published article on in a ham radio magazine. That was my most recent one. And this was about packet radio. Back then, we were working with a device called a TNC-1, which came out of Tapper, the Tucson Amateur Radio Group. This was a kit. It came with this nice box. It came with this nice manual. And that's what the technology looked like then. This is what the technology looks like now. Okay. And I lived in Medford at the time. We were lucky that the water commissioner in Medford was Bruce Eichmann, who was a ham. So you can imagine how we could get onto water towers there. So Terry was working at that point back then. This is 1980s. And we got the antennas up onto the roof. And our goal was to set up a packet radio network that went down the East Coast. And so we could get Sal from Medford. There was a repeater in Elk's Neck, Maryland, that would then get us down into D.C. So we were working with the guys in D.C. We would get together at the Chesapeake House on Route 95 and meet with Tom Clark, Phil Karn, Bob Greninga, guys like that were working with us at that point. And we had a pretty decent network running. We could never get north because there was one guy in North Jersey that wanted to use a different protocol, and he was intransigent, and we were working with the guys who really knew what they were doing. So. And then it kind of slowed down and kind of, backed off, and people went on and did other things, but it never really went away. And it's still in use for APRS, and it's still in use for WinLink. And a lot of the radios today talk packet. So, for example, this radio by itself can connect to the WinLink station by packet without any other software there. So there is still some use for this stuff. Plus, it's kind of the basis of digital communications. After CW and RIDI, this was the first real digital communication mode. And then, of course, FT8 and the other WSJT forms came in and got replaced. So that's what a TNC-1 looked like. That was the first commercially available TNC. This is a TNC-2. You probably can't see it. But that was also released by the Tucson Amateur Radio Group. And then the commercials came in, and Cantronics started making them. Heathkit started making them.
MFJ.
MFJ started making them. And then the software basically took over. And now you really don't use a hardware TNC anymore. Now you're using software, which I'll
So when into. A lot of these companies came in, they were building the two and not the one?
Well, the one was a 6502 processor. It was pretty advanced. That was back when a Z80 or an 8080 was the main processor. And so the TNC2 was a Z80. And that was a lot easier to copy. The software is a lot more available back then. And everybody else after that had Z80s.
And there was also a couple of companies that completely developed their own hardware solutions. I'm thinking Cantronics. with their line of TNCs, while they were protocol compatible, they were completely different animals at the circuit board level.
Yeah, okay.
The same with AEA, Advanced Electronic Applications.
Okay.
They had another complete hardware implementation, but the key to success of all this was the fact the protocol was published, open, had a lot of development behind it, and nobody really cared about your hardware as long as
you... So however you got there, you got there.
Right. As long as you spoke the protocol.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the protocol, there's a video out there that I was trying to find by B. Dale Garvey, who is one of the forerunners of packet radio, forerunners of amateur radio at that time. And he's also the current president of ARDC, Amateur Radio Digital Communications, which is a funding group. And he has a really interesting YouTube video, which I was trying to find, of going to a digital networking conference in Harrisburg back probably in the early 80s, maybe in the late 70s, and getting snowed into a hotel room with Phil Karn, K9Q, who was one of the geniuses of amateur radio. And they stayed up all night and wrote the AX25 protocol. So that's where this came from. It came from two hams, genius hams, who were snowed in and had nothing else to do, and they decided they'd develop a whole new
They put a bullet in the existing protocol at the time, which was called the Vancouver Protocol,
right,
which unfortunately was complete. They were two incompatible protocols, and in another one of those cases, now there, you can make the case that Vancouver was better in some respects, but it was kind of like the old VHS beta thing. Technically, beta was a better product. VHS got the traction. AX25 got the traction. Vancouver Protocol just kind of withered and died.
Well, AX25 was kind of an offshoot of regular X20.
That's right. That's right. And they shoehorned in other stuff. So if you're familiar with X25, when I get into the AX25 packet format, you may be able to make the translation of what did X25 look like and what are the hams at. So I'm departing from my normal slides. These are all AI-generated slides, which is why they're not following the typical presentation format. It could develop graphics that I can't develop, so I'm trying this out, see what you guys think. This is kind of the intro of where Packet came from. And this is kind of an overview, and I'll be talking about each one of these things separately. This is what Packet is. This is the protocol. We started out with hardware TNCs. We moved to software TNCs. We're going to talk about connected mode and unconnected mode. We're going to talk about what's in a packet. Talk a little bit of terminal node controllers. Talk a little bit about KISS. Talk a little bit about WinLink, and that's kind of what the overview is for today.
You left off the OSI 7-layer model.
That's right, and I told you we're not talking about that today. All right, so this is, I showed you the hardware stuff. By the way, this is showing you the downside of using Notebook LM to design slides for you, because it misspelled terminal.
Obviously,
and it left in the stuff in the top. This is still beta level stuff, but.
You didn't pay for it.
Yeah, I didn't pay for it, and it doesn't help. You think I could develop this graphic?
No.
You think you could develop this graphic? Yeah. How much time?
Too much.
Okay. I was going to say measured on a calendar.
Yeah. So just some of the things that I thought we needed to talk about is there's a, I'm not going to talk about chips yet. Okay. This is basically talking about the fact that we started out with hardware, and then the software developed to the point that we didn't need hardware anymore. When Packet first came out, there's no way the IBM XT could decode Packet. It wasn't fast enough, but now it can. Okay. And there's software and there's internal hardware that can do it. And there's two pieces of software that we use right now. One is called called Sound Mode, and UZ7HO wrote this thing. It's what we use anytime we're doing any digital stuff in the satellite room, because it will not only decode AX25 packet, it'll decode 9600 baud packet, it'll decode 19.2. So a lot of the telemetry that comes down from satellites is in 9600 baud. GMSK or something like that, and there are sound modem programs for that. So generically, if you want to talk packet or any other digital mode, you're probably using one of the versions of sound modem, which we can get into at some future time if you're interested in it. If you want to talk APRS, the program is Direwolf. Okay, that's really the gold standard for APRS. It's designed specifically for deep APRS. It's what we're running right here on this Raspberry Pi to talk to the APRS station. And it's in the Pi that I was talking about in the general membership meeting at home, that's hooked up to a RTL-SDR receiver that's picking up these packets and decoding them and turning them into weather. So these are the two basic software programs that are primarily used for packet. If you're just doing packet, you're probably doing sound modem. When we run packet for the WinLink station, we are running sound modem. Okay, so that's how we do packet on the WinLink station. Okay,